Hi guys and welcome to Lights, Camera, Conversation. Today we're joined by John Stewart and the rest of the team. We've got Tom and David here and we're going to be talking about random actor stuff that we've been getting on with recently and everything around that kind of industry. So John, nice to have you here. How have you been so far? Been good? Been busy?
Yeah, really good. Had a good start to the year, luckily. Last year was not a great year and anyone else in my industry will agree with you. But it feels that this year, touch wood, where it feels like it started strongly, so that's good. A few little corporates, a few little bits and bobs. I did a telly gig in January and I've got some stuff coming up next month already, so it's feeling good.
Mm. So a bit of a background of how we know you, John. So we've probably known you for about 2 years or so, I think.
Yep.
We've done several projects together. We've done a lot of internal comms to do with health and safety. So it involves a lot of reconstruction of accidents and things like that. So we've kind of, it's been a mixture of having actors in the story as well as people from different sites. So unfortunately, a lot of it is under NDA or just for internal. So unfortunately, we can't share a lot of it, but there's the odd bit we can share. So hopefully we can put some of the clips in this pod at least. So the first thing we did with you was, it was a health and safety video and you played a character who was a bit naughty and not using a blade safely. Do you remember?
Yes. Yeah. I can't remember what I was cutting. Was I cutting metal? I think I know I was on a workbench.
A bit of wood. I
think. And there was there was specific gloves I had to wear under the health and safety regulations. And did we do a version where it was wearing the gloves correctly but not wearing the gloves correctly?
You slipped and it was really close.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, fair play, mate. Thanks. Thanks for telling me what to do my job.
Good performance there, Tom. Yeah. Now, I don't know why you didn't play the role. That was...
Oh, really?
Yeah, beautiful. 10 out of 10.
I was trying to encompass your acting skills.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. I prefer John's take on it. Sorry, Tom.
Yeah. Well, that's Peter, the other character, because that story is about Peter. He witnesses an accident.
Yeah.
And he kind of sees it. He kind of sees the other guy who's doing something wrong, not using the right PPE. Mm. But he doesn't do anything about it, and the guy sustains quite a nasty injury using a grinder on his hands. But then he spots you doing something wrong, but this time he intervenes and saves you.
And there was
cutting your hand.
There was some pretty impressive prosthetics that day, which I didn't have. But so there was someone who had actually sliced his hand open.
Yeah.
Which I think you shot earlier in the day.
Yeah, that was like earlier in, also earlier in the story. Yeah. He hadn't said anything, but Pete was a Peter.
Yeah.
He said he thinking and said, "Oh, I should say something. Oh no, he's experienced. I shouldn't say anything." Mm. And then he didn't, and he obviously had massive blood all over his hands, and his skin was all. Yeah.
The guy that played that, he actually said he was going to get a McDonald's with just the whole scar on his arm to see if he can scare people.
Just pretend nothing's wrong.
A Coke from like McDonald's worker and seeing how it goes. But he didn't do it. I was fuming. I'm like,
because the whole point of that, we wanted to show something that's really hard hitting. So if you can show a big wound and lots of blood, then it's going to be quite a very visual
impactful
thing. And then we've got other people around him coming around for first aid and that sort of stuff, people on the radios and like, we need help. So which is very similar to the other one we've done with you, but this time you had the accident.
Yeah.
It's different to that one though, isn't it? Because this was a really minor thing that happened to John, but the last time it was quite a big incident, wasn't it? Big scar, big cut. But yours quite...
Well,
minor.
I mean, John evaded any damage loss in the first video, obviously, because Peter came and saved you, really. Yeah. Saved you from cutting your hand off. Yeah.
But I had a recent one where it was a slip and a trip situation.
Yeah, and you broke your arm.
And rolled my ankle and had a dislocated my shoulder. Yeah. Or hurt my shoulder.
Well, you should know. You did it.
Yeah, it was a long time selection.
It was acting, Tom.
Was it? Yeah. Oh, I thought it was real.
I was very method. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah. Is it better now?
Yeah, no, just better. About. Just about,
good,
yeah.
Because
just to was do it proper method.
Yeah, is this
sugar. Just to do it correctly, I did go out and I did dislocate my shoulder just to make sure I could really bring that back to life for you.
Yeah.
Popped it back in after the shoot.
Yeah, nice. Well done. Yeah. For that one.
But it's really interesting on those health and safety ones, because obviously you always taught me through exactly, right, what's the purpose of this video? What are we trying to demonstrate to the staff wherever we're working? But coming in as an actor on these things, because we shoot it in such short snippets, it's not like a 10-page dialogue, meaty dialogue scene, but it all comes through in the edit. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of faith, like coming on as an actor into your guys' kind of home, really, to actually put our faith that you're going to sell that what we're doing, because it's so short, snappy. Because sometimes if you're faking a bit of a slip and trip or a fall or this and that and the other, if it's not done correctly, all of a sudden we as the actor can really look quite hammy.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I've been really pleased with what you guys have come up with and what I've come out with on the other end.
Good. How have you found corporate work compared to film work? Because you do that as well. You've got your own TV credits, like Happy Valley. Mm. What's the difference between it?
Oh, there's loads of differences, really. I think, I don't know, it's weirdly, on a lot of corporate sets, everything's feels a little bit less frantic in a weird way. Because obviously TV, you're part of a much bigger organism. Like there might be 30 to 40 people who, if the shoot goes on past 5 o'clock, then you've all of a sudden got 35 people's overtime and all that to be up against. But obviously you've also got, I mean, I've worked with some wonderful people on your shoots, but there's not been any huge household names. Tom Wright. Thomas Wright. But so that's obviously a significant difference in terms of the short, sharp little bursts of action which I do with you guys. There's not a lot of heavy 2.5 pages of dialogue to get through. It's a lot. It's a much different in terms of the acting of it. It's a much different discipline.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
What about the way you treat, like the way you eat in the morning? Yeah, because we give you like scrambled egg and
yeah.
What's been your worst thing you've ever been given on a shoot?
Can you?
I have
this?
Been fed. Right, food's very important on a set.
Yeah,
food's very important.
Be, yeah,
there was one shoot I went on, which was a very highbrow TV credit, which I was delighted to get, like absolutely buzzing.
Could you name this?
Absolutely not. Oh, okay. that's my NDA. they were like, breakfast will probably be finished by the time you get there, John, but what do you want? Because we'll set some stuff aside. And I was like, buzzing, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
I love, for anyone who's going to work with me in the future, scrambled eggs, brown toast. Simple, yep. Love it. Mm-hmm. So I says, yeah, if I could have some scrambled eggs on toast, that'd be great.
That's not a lot to ask for either, that's quite...
I thought that was pretty simple.
That's pretty simple.
So I'll remember that next time I want to set with you.
hey, we always give it a
we've made sure before. We've made sure.
Yeah, fajitas. Yeah. Fajitas are strong with you. Not for breakfast.
No.
But yeah, so they message and says, oh, well, I'll see what I can do, I think. And then I rocked up to my trailer on the day. Sorry, yes, a trailer. And I went into the trailer and there was a plastic container just sat waiting for me, and I was like, oh, sick, it's my breakfast ready for me, this is great.
Yeah.
And it had a note on the top that says, this was all they had left, or that we couldn't scramble or something or other. And I opened up the lid and it was literally a piece of like cold, it was barely toast, it was like bread with just 4 hard-boiled eggs still in their shells, just sat there. And I had horrendous plastic cutlery that I really struggled to even get into these eggs with. So I just sat there in this huge trailer before this TV credit, picking shells off eggs and trying to make sure they don't get in my mouth.
How long did it take you to get all those eggshells off?
It was, I really felt I'd made it that day. I didn't reevaluate any of my life choices.
I bet
that
was the hardest part of your day, wasn't it? Getting those eggshells off.
Yeah, it was.
But at least you're sitting in a trailer to do it.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I've had a previous career and now I'm an actor, and I think, and even my worst day on a TV set is a million miles better than my best day in my previous career. So, yeah.
How did that happen with your previous career?
Yeah, was it quite easy to transcend into the acting career?
But bigger question is why?
Why?
It's a free question there.
Yeah, why? There was a certain tone in your voice.
Yeah, why?
Why? You had a wage. It was secure, you moron. I'll try and do the short version. But I'd loved acting from the age of like 10, 11, done loads at school, loads at university. And I knew deep down it was what I wanted to do. Like, I had the bug, whatever the bug was. But, of course, mum and dad, loving to bits, no beef there. But they just... They kind of encouraged it as a hobby. It was never right. That's a really sensible career life decision from you.
Yeah.
So I ended up training as a lawyer and working as a lawyer. After I left uni, I was in an improvised comedy troupe at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in 2008. And then as soon as I stepped off stage in Edinburgh, I moved back home, went to law school, had a part-time job at the weekend, and then qualified as a lawyer. And I did nothing remotely creative for 5 years. Like, it was just... law school exams, training, qualifying. But then a mate from uni rang me up out the blue in 2013, I remember it was. And he just says, oh, are you still acting? And I'm like, no. And he goes, are you still in Manchester? And I'm like, yeah, where's this going? And he says, oh, well, I've written a short film and I think you'd be really good for the lead. Do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah. Like, I'd never been on screen in my life. So I said, yeah. And then I went and I spent a weekend with him and it was just the best. I was awful. But it was absolutely brilliant.
Can we see this? Is it?
I'm not going to tell you where, but yeah.
Maybe somewhere.
It exists.
Let's say it's not in your showreel. Yeah.
No. I love you, Jack. Love you, Jack. It's and it woke it up in me, but yeah, it's not my best work.
John, you decided to have a career change. So what were your kind of first steps getting in of doing that?
Mm. I live in Manchester, born and raised Manchester, and Manchester is a cracking city. Leeds is also brilliant, by the way.
Mm. Good, I'm glad he said that.
Yeah, but Manchester's just got a really cracking like fringe theatre scene and everything. So there's a lot of young, hungry, passionate creatives kind of lolling around. And the thing is, if you just open yourself up to it and throw yourself into it, don't worry about, oh, this isn't TV. This isn't going to make me a load of money. This is with a load of students. You don't know whether it's going to turn out right in the end. And I just threw myself in. So I started at, there was a place called 53.2. In Manchester and Manchester Actors Platform and these places where it is just for people who are brand new starting out, and I embedded myself in the network, and off the back of that you've got that person wants to make a short, that person's putting something together, this person's putting a play on, there's an R&D, and I did everything that you could possibly think of at bargain basement level just to build my network and build connections and everything, and that's how I really started.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. What's the most famous person you've met, or is that under NDA?
Other than your dad.
Yeah, my dad.
His dad is literally Dennis Stewart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remembered that now.
Played with Pele as well.
Yeah.
I've met Pele.
Have you met Pele?
I didn't know you met Pele.
I actually haven't met Pele.
I didn't know.
I don't know why we both said that at the same time.
Because I have.
I'm not lying.
Maybe I predicted what you were going to say in my head.
So, for people who don't know, who's your dad?
That's so weird then.
Yeah. Well, I've actually lied on a podcast.
I was like, he passed a couple of years ago. Do you know who Pele is?
Did we have like this conversation in the pub the other day? And that's where
we've had this conversation around a campfire.
Yeah, so I knew it was coming. So I'm like,
I don't know why
I said that.
Yeah. Am I speaking through you?
I have a friend whose grandma's met Pele, apparently. So if he's watching this.
Well, Pele.
I can see that.
Pele's head.
Well, John, you'll explain to a people who don't know who your dad is. That might be a good place to start.
And
how we know he'd met Pele.
Yeah, Pele. Okay. I've not met Pele.
Byron has.
Not surprising. I thought everyone had. No. So my dad's originally a Geordie, and he played for Newcastle Schoolboys at first in the mid to late 60s. And then Newcastle actually turned him down for a pro contract because he was too short.
Oh, really?
And he went, in typical dad fashion, he went, oh, well, right, jog on. I still want to play football. So he went and signed for Sunderland.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah.
Which obviously went down really well with all his family and friends and his whole community. But he signed for Sunderland, worked up the ranks there. And then his most famous moment at Sunderland was he won the FA Cup in 1973 against Leeds United.
I knew that would be okay.
The famous Don Revie team, and Sunderland were in a lower division and they had a massive ascent, and managed to win that, which is often voted one of the greatest FA Cup.
They put that on TV the other week.
Oh, yeah.
The whole game.
Really?
Yeah.
And you put it on and you didn't watch it?
No.
Stayed clear.
No, I didn't watch it. But yeah, they announced it on one of Leeds games and I thought, why would I want to watch that when we lost?
Yeah.
But maybe it's because it was such a good game for... Yeah, it was huge.
I mean, some of the videos I've seen of Sunderland, the city, just like all those things where there's not one person in the house, just everyone's out on the streets waving banners and everything. It was unreal.
Where is Sunderland now?
Do you want me to say slightly lower than Leeds?
Yeah.
Yeah, only took 50 years.
We're not going to go into it. Let's see how you met Pele. Let's move on to that.
But yeah, so then he signed for Manchester City, and then he won the League Cup with Man City in 76 at Wembley, scored an overhead kick winning goal.
Oh, wow.
Which was a few years ago voted the best League Cup goal of all time, and he got presented with an award on the pitch at Wembley. But then after, in 1978, he left City and he went to New York Cosmos, obviously in New York, and he replaced Pele. in the team at New York Cosmos.
I mean, that's quite a big
shoes yeah,
that's
to fill.
Relatively yeah. big shoes to fill.
Yeah. Yes.
And he played with Franz Beckenbauer and Carlos Alberto and Giorgi Canaglia and all these greats. Like, essentially what LA Galaxy and all these Saudi Arabian teams are doing now. New York Cosmos were doing that in the in the late 70s, trying to just pick superstars from all around the world and put them in one team. But they had very regular, like in America, glitz and glamour exhibition matches or big reunion matches where they would bring Pelé back and he'd play a big match, just a one-off and all this stuff. So Dad trained with him regularly and played with him, and some cracking pictures and stories and stuff he's told me over the years. It's amazing. But fast forward years and years and years, Pelé was attending a charity dinner at the Midland Hotel in Manchester, and my brothers had met Pelé years ago in a changing room where my dad was playing in when I was only 4 years old. And I was the only Chewett son who hadn't met Pelé. And it was a bone of contention over the years. Like, my brothers would just throw it into a fight every once in a while. Like, yeah, but I've met Pelé. I'm like, get lost.
Yeah, so that would annoy me as well.
Yeah,
to be fair.
It just won the fight instantly. But then I knew he was at this dinner, and I just rang my dad and I says, Dad, he's in Manchester. What do you reckon? And we didn't even go to the dinner or do any. He just made a few calls, and all of a sudden we rocked up and had a meet and greet with Pelé, had a chat to him, shook his hand, and got some pictures, and then we left.
Wow.
And it was absolutely amazing. And seeing how when my dad was walking in, seeing Pelé's reaction to my dad as old friends.
Yeah, that's quite surreal. Yeah.
Like, not just, oh, do you remember you played with this guy 40, 50 years ago? It was literally hugs, embracing, hi, Dennis, and all that. Unreal. And then I got, was it before then? Because I did a film about my dad's life for his birthday.
And
I managed to get a message from Pelé wishing my dad a happy birthday.
That's unreal.
Which he was pretty buzzing about as well.
Yeah. What does he do now? Does he do anything like press or what now? Or is he fully retired from football?
Every now and then he gets asked to do something, like the Manchester Evening News ask him to do something. Or I was at Man City, the club, a couple of months ago because they wanted him to do a podcast with one of the current players. It didn't work out, but anytime he's asked to talk about his olden days, he will.
Get him a podcast.
He'd be far more entertaining than me.
Speaking of Pelé and film related, we talked about it last year, didn't we, that Pelé was in Escape to Victory Michael Caine, Sylvester Stallone, and a few others, and quite a lot of Ipswich players at the time.
Ipswich players?
Yeah, because Ipswich were like one of the best teams whenever that year was made.
Yeah, that's
whenever it was made.
Must be this.
And a lot of them were made up the rest of the squad.
Yeah.
I don't really remember much of the film. I just remember Stallone. I've
never seen that film.
Stallone was in goal. I just
I remember Pelé being in a film.
Never seen it.
Was Beckham in that as well? Or was that too?
Beckham? Been in a few.
No, that's
is that way too?
Early 80s.
About 10 years before
70s.
He was born.
Yeah. When we make these essentially short films, they take quite a lot of prep work, don't they? Pre-production.
Oh, yeah.
So a particular one, what we talked about with John, where you fell over and hurt your shoulder and stuff, there's a lot of calls and a lot of meetings with the client. Bar and I spent like a whole day on site, like a month before, with the client. The two guys that happened to be in it as well, working through the story in the location. So there's a lot of detail and depth goes into that because they're both very big regional health and safety people that they have to tick a lot of boxes. So it had to be very thorough, exactly how we're doing it, what we're seeing on screen, the PPE and exact procedure everyone does is all very, very clear. So we all kind of know as best as possible of how we're going to shoot it, how we're going to light it. So then when we do turn up on the set, on a location, as it were, that's always quite a short period of time, isn't it? So we've got to be prepared as possible. And usually it's a working site, like a power station or wherever. So we can't control everything. It's not like it's a studio. So, so your kind words earlier are quite really nice to hear. The fact that you trust, especially when you work with us, that we explain to you as best we can what we're doing, how we're doing it, and we're going to end up putting it together in a way that makes sense.
Well, I think that the biggest thing for actors, especially when you are just arriving on, say it's not an established show that you know the character, you know the setting, you know everything back to front, or say a soap where you know the world you're in. Like, I know nothing about these power plants before I rock up. So I've always got to put faith that, you know what, you guys have done all that pre-production, you know exactly what I should be doing, because I don't want to walk in having, it's already a bit of a, like, you're getting used to your space, you're getting used to your co-stars, you're getting used to, like, maybe the officials from the plants where we're working. But I don't want to have to be asking those questions constantly about, hang on, should I have my gloves on at this stage? Should I have my high vis on at this point? Is there a hard hat? Like, usually I'd kind of, like on a lot of corporate gigs sometimes actually, I tend to have to ask those questions because that's just me as an actor. I want to do it right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they haven't been thought of. Whereas luckily with you guys, it's always like, I don't have to think about that because there's such, not strict is the wrong word, but that you've kind of done all the homework that I can basically just float in. And I mean, if nothing's going to be done wrong from my presentation, shall we say. But it just makes it all quicker, I imagine, on the day, but also in the edit then, because, you know, there's not, I've never had to do a reshoot with you guys. Mm-hmm. Like, they've not realised, oh, I should have had the gloves on at that point, you know?
Yeah. Do you do much homework? Like, whenever you've with Cassidy for something, do you ever think, oh, God, I need to panic about what is power station, what are they doing? Or do you kind of just go, I kind of have an idea, got the script, I'm going to turn up and just see how it goes in the day?
I mean, with you guys, I never don't do homework to a certain extent, but I won't Google a power plant and spend a week revising nuclear power. I don't often think I'm going to need that on the day.
Yeah.
By the way, if you ever need it in the future, just let me know. Fusion, I will do it.
Yeah.
I will
do it. Films, you do a lot of homework in terms of the role, the actor. And then do you watch like that series? So you like, for example, The Bear. You're in that. Did you watch the whole of The Bear before that, or did as soon as you got casted, did you then watch the whole of it so you knew what it's about?
I think I'd already watched The Bear before I got that tape. But the one I always think about was Last Tango in Halifax. Mm-hmm. I was in an episode in series 4, I think, 3 or 4, and I'd never watched a single minute of the show. So I was a bit like, I don't even know where to pitch this. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I should sound, how I should speak, how I should do this. So, and it wasn't on iPlayer. It wasn't on any of the streaming services. And like I know David is also, I'm a big lover of physical media anyway. Like, I've got 2,500 DVDs everywhere in my house, in alphabetical order, don't worry.
Oh, wow.
I rushed out and I went to HMV in Manchester, and I went and bought series 1 to 3 plus Christmas specials of Last Tango in Halifax, and I watched the whole series before I did. It was actually before I rocked up on set, because as well, there's a certain element of having respect for the professionals you're working with, especially if it's an established show. I don't want to be in the makeup chair or in my trailer or on set when they're like, it was a cracking scene we had with this, remember this, and I don't want to just sit there and go,
you've no idea. Yeah.
Why? Who's that? I'm just here for the day. Oh, I don't really care.
Do you meet people like that?
Yeah.
So those people that literally get roles and not seen a single episode.
And they don't even care. They think, look, I'm there to rock up get and money. Say these four lines and leave. But I never do that. I will always I'll always do a lot more homework than I need to. There was, you know, the Netflix show One Day. I was in episode 10 and they'd sent me like all 12 episodes, I think it was, at that, before I even went to do my my scene. So I made sure I read every single episode before I went and filmed it.
Yeah.
So it was like each episode was like 50-55 pages, like times 12-13.
That's a lot of reading.
Which, I mean, I didn't need to know any of that background for my character. Yeah. I was a wedding guest. I had a couple of sentences.
It didn't, in the background.
It wasn't informing
my... You
wanted
to be in the wedding.
Yeah, it wasn't me informing my character decisions. It was just, but then, like, when I rocked up to film it, I was sat in the chair with my makeup artist, just chatting, and I was like, how's the shoot gone? What have you been up to? Any highlights? And she said, oh, we just shot this lovely scene in the garden when he goes back and his mum's unwell. And I was like, oh my God, reading that on the page, that was epic, that was brilliant. And I talked about the scene, and then the conversation was able to then develop and flow. And it was because I wanted to show respect to the production I'm working on, and I've actually put the time in, and I know, because these people have lived it for 3-4 months. I've been there for a morning, you know?
Yeah.
And then the best bit was, filmed for 5 days, got cut.
Completely?
Yeah.
Oh.
How is that getting cut?
Brilliant.
Yeah, especially because you can't get any of those footage back, can you?
Don't get the rushes, no.
Yeah.
Do you get cut? Like, this is a broad question.
Do you get cut regular? Is that what you're about to say?
Well, I've seen him in
thanks, Byron. Yeah,
I've seen him in a couple things as a policeman and a headmaster. That's what I saw.
I've seen you in
Happy Valley.
Happy Valley.
The biggest one that I've seen is
Brassic.
Oh, Brassic, yeah.
The biggest one I've seen is in For Me Once, where you're a shopkeeper.
Camera owner.
What do you say?
Super fast service.
Do you want the super fast service?
Yeah, that's 100 quid, by the way.
If you could be in any kind of program, film, like, for example, comedy, romance, and you could play any character in the world, what would you play? What film would you be in? What genre would it be? And is it a TV show or a film?
For all those casting directors out there, yes.
Jinx, we do work together a bit too much.
Oh, man.
It's a big question.
Does it have to have been something that's already happened?
No. No, it could be.
Or future Star Wars series, something like that. Yeah.
Anything. Like, what is your if you got this role, you've made your life, you've made your career, you've done.
Okay, I'll tell you. There's probably a dream, and then there's probably a more tangible dream.
Tell us both. Start with like the biggest, or maybe start with small.
Realistic goal.
Good,
realistic.
Because I haven't thought of the biggest dream yet, so hopefully it'll come to me in the next sentence. I don't do vision boards and stuff. A lot of actors do, but I'd say the most tangible one is that I really have always loved British cop dramas, like cop thrillers, like your Line of Duties, your Happy Valleys, and all this.
Amazing, yeah.
And like I Luther. I loved Luther.
Luther's good. Yeah.
And I've always said to people, like, if I go through my whole career, sadly never being like above the line lead actor. Yeah, okay, that's fine, whatever. But I'd love to be like the next name. Mm-hmm. Or the third or fourth name on the call sheet. So, perfect example, Luther, you know his partner in the show. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, and
he's like local. He's from like Stockport or something. Mm-hmm. And he's, I think it's Warren Brown.
Right,
might have made that up. Yes. But I think it's him.
And
I love like that part. I love it. He's in every episode. He goes off some interrogations on his own every once in a while. Not necessarily the lead carrying that show, but just a really functional, working, dramatic cop actor.
A good cop or bad cop?
Oh, I tell you what. Oh, now you're getting me going. I'd love to be a good actor until like episode 9 or 10.
Okay. Yeah.
When all of a sudden,
so you're corrupt.
So you want to be in Line of Duty then, basically.
I mean,
you turn out to be a good
Twitter
cop
told me it was coming back this year.
Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to be in something like that because I think as well, like from a legal background, procedural, cop law stuff. I think I could slip into it quite easy.
It's realistic.
Yeah.
All right. Big. Think big. This is your lead role.
To play your dad in a...
To play your dad in a pretty good role.
Yeah,
could write that, to be fair, as long as they don't ask me to play football.
Yeah.
That could bring my dad's legacy crashing.
Yeah,
down.
That probably would do.
So you don't want to join us on our next five-a-side then?
I'll bring you the oranges at half-time.
Does he want to come? Five-a-side.
You think I'm letting you loose on my dad? he's 76. I'm not having you doing sliding tackles.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Okay, well, this has come to me now, but I was a massive Potter nerd growing up.
Right.
And I'm obviously doing that TV show. Which is in development at the moment. And of all the people in all the books, I've always really fancied playing Professor Lupin.
You do look like a Lupin. You could
right,
play
that's,
off very well.
That's
yeah.
like, this is market research.
Have they casted yet?
No, they haven't cast Lupin, but there's been like murmurs about other casts, like the main Dumbledore and...
John Lithgow is apparently Dumbledore.
Peaky Blinders, what's his name?
Cillian Murphy.
Cillian Murphy's as Voldemort.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
I want to do it even more now. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the number of scenes that have Lupin and Voldemort in.
Probably have you none. Written to them or auditioned? Have you done anything for them?
I've not auditioned for the Harry Potter series.
Just email
this
info.
This is your audition.
But I will say as well, because I have to say it is my favourite show for about 20 years, which I've got my nieces into. I love Doctor Who.
Right. Yeah.
I used to like it. David Tennant. Stopped watching it after.
But I wouldn't want to be the Doctor. And I've said this to people before. I don't want the pressure of the whole show on my shoulders.
Yeah. You'd make a good Dalek.
Dalek?
What? I've got a face for radio. Cheers, Byron. I appreciate that.
You'll be a good Cyberman.
Again, in a machine. Like...
Exterminate.
So I play best the characters with zero emotion, monotonous. You're giving the actor all the best kind of descriptive words here.
What's the one with like the things that come off, like the little... alien things. I'm not describing this very well.
In a show that's been going for 60 years, you just said yeah, the one with the little alien things.
No, they really scared me as a kid. Like they were like gooey things.
Slytherines?
Maybe.
Slytherines?
That's what I thought. Slytherins.
I said maybe.
The Slytherines you're talking about. Slytherines, you were
Slytherines. Oh, I've always said it's Slytherines.
Oh, they give me nightmares.
They're from Planet Raxacar and Kefalopatorius, just in case you're interested.
They appear random.
Sign them up. He knows everything.
Yeah. Oh, genuinely, I don't know.
Series 1, episode 3, yeah. Aliens of London.
That's the one. I don't know if it's episode 3, but well, series 100%.
They fly a plane, aircraft into Big Ben.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And they've just got really long alien tannoids.
But they go,
tannoids? They unzip themselves.
I'm going to have to find a picture while you guys talk amongst yourselves.
Dog 2 is quite attainable because, I mean, there's in a series, what is maybe it's 6 to 8 episodes in a series,
yeah.
And each episode's got countless people that only in that single episode. So you could play an actor in a one-off episode.
One of my mates had a full-size TARDIS. I'm actually right now
full-size TARDIS.
Full-size TARDIS in his front room,
inside,
not the inside.
Okay.
but then actually tomorrow I'm going to a screening of I'm in a really fantastic Doctor Who tribute web series called Hooligans, like spelt WHO Ligons.
Oh, okay.
It's very clever.
That's very clever.
But yeah, it's from a bunch of Doctor Who fans in Manchester, and I play a really cool character. And I'm watching the finale for the first time tomorrow.
Who'd you play?
I play a character called Roger, who might have an alter ego in the finale, which I've not cleared whether I'm allowed to tell you or not.
Okay. Where can I watch this web series? Is it on YouTube?
It's on YouTube, yeah. It's through a company called Cinescope Pictures.
Is our web series, is that kind of growing? Is that quite popular? I don't know.
I think the thing is with web series is they're a lot more work than the average. So you kind of, I've not seen too many of them out and about in Manchester.
Yeah.
Because obviously committing to make a short film sometimes is now and impossible for some people.
Yeah.
But if you're committing to 5 episodes of 10 minutes, that's a hell of a lot more work.
Yeah. All right, I've not found them, but did you know that someone has genuinely created a Google Docs of every single villain in Doctor Who? And you can
do believe that.
And you can just go onto it. It's got the story titles, episode numbers, Doctor, actor.
Do you want to
who's genuinely?
Do you want to show the camera?
This is yours, John.
I was gonna say, do you want to test me? But
The
only thing is, I don't know anything pre 2005.
All right, no, hang on.
I don't know anything pre 2005.
Christopher Eccleston.
Before Christopher Eccleston, I don't know.
All right, here's a guess for all of you. Yeah. How many bad guys do you reckon have been in Doctor Who from the beginning?
Since 1963?
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably going to be a bad guy in every single episode.
I have a guess.
How many episodes are there?
If there's 5 Weeping Angels in an episode, is that 5 or is that 1?
No, I think it's just the names.
I'm not saying that as if it's going to make a difference.
So different names.
I'm
how many names?
1,250.
Come on, that's need to be realistic. That's a lot of bad guys.
216.
How many episodes are there?
That's quite realistic.
I'm going to say 540.
Bearing in mind, just the names are different. So like if Dalek's in it twice, that's
700.
You should have said like 100 and made this really dramatic. Cause it's not really dramatic anymore. Now you said 1,000.
Well, I didn't say 1,000. I said 540.
Yeah,
you were 700 or something, weren't you?
I might just make up a number.
I said 700.
There's 8,999 bad guys.
Oh. So when I said 1,750, you told me to go down. When I was actually
I wanted to be dramatic for the podcast. It's actually only 448 bad guys.
So I was quite close.
A 1,000. Well,
thanks for asking us the question, then not letting me get the right answer.
Yeah. Lying about the answer.
Lying for pleasure.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Wow. There weren't actually 1,000.
Yeah, no.
400.
You did specify that.
So that's quite a lot.
Yeah.
Random actors. I reckon John's at least 5 of them. Dalek.
Cyberman.
That robot that you said. The thing that I couldn't find. I didn't realize it was 400 odd, otherwise I wouldn't even try to find them. I put Tannoys and I found it wasn't the Slytherines, whoever you said.
I didn't think it was.
It wasn't them.
Because I was doing this and you would know it by the fact that I was doing
Yeah, and I want them.
I don't get what you're trying to describe.
Yeah, it's so weird.
I don't think the podcast really wants to know about this.
The sound like...
Is it the Ood? Is it the Hath?
Ood.
The Weeping Angels?
The Ood.
That's what the sound
was
like.
The Ood?
I don't know. Ah!
The Ood.
That rings a bell. And that rings a bell.
And like a Purcell ball in the hand.
Hang on. Ood.
Ood.
Oh, O-U-D.
First appeared in Impossible Planet in the second pit, series 2.
That rings a bell.
Planet of the Ood, Series 4, Episode 3.
If you've got this right, by the way, you're
such a nerd.
Yeah, you got it right.
There you go.
You actually got it right.
Yeah, it's the Ood.
They scare the hell out of me. How do you
How
know
they
that
scary?
For me?
I'm
a fan, mate.
So out of 448 of random things, you actually got it right.
And you described they can take things off their head and put them down. They don't do that.
I didn't even do that. I didn't say that.
They're holding their brain.
Yeah, I said I thought those things come out of the brain instead of the chin.
No, that is
their brains are inside.
That is bonkers. Yeah. I'm proud of you there. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Well done, John.
I told you I was a fan.
On that note, thank you very much for coming over. We do appreciate it. I'm sure we'll get you in plenty of the stuff in the future. Cool. And thank you for the audience for joining us for this long. We spoke about Doctor Who and everything. So, yeah. Thanks, guys. And join us next time on Lights, Camera, Conversation. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Cut that, Tom.